Good evening, everyone. Thanks for your patience. As you know, in these last couple days of session, it gets busy and lots of people are in lots of different meetings. The meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the last meeting, May 13th, before us. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Detmer moves approval of the minutes. Any questions, corrections, additions to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have three items on our agenda this evening. A change to the budget resolution, House File 622, and House and Senate File 1398. I will take the first one, which is the budget resolution. And members, what I will do is move the A31 amendment to the budget resolution, which increases the amount of money in the capital investment target. Members, this is an amount of money sufficient to do a $100 million bonding bill. And members, I guess I was actually thinking that there maybe wouldn't be a bonding bill this year, but as we've had other discussions with the Senate and with other individuals, we have felt that there are some things that should be done. Representative Torkelson, Chair Torkelson, has a bill, House File 622, which contains our latest list of things, although that may be subject to change as it moves forward. But members, I think that while I would prefer to probably not have a bonding bill this year under the circumstances with the items that we have, I think that it does make sense to move forward with this. And I've got a technical issue that I've got to talk to Mr. Marks about. Just a moment. Okay, I think we're good. Yeah, members, I guess I know there's also a couple of amendments that we have here, and I guess I'd recognize Representative Carlson to move an amendment to the amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the First Amendment I would like to move is the A35 amendment.
Okay, Representative Carlson moves the A35 amendment to the A31 amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, if you'll recall, when I talked about a bonding bill, capital investment bill, in earlier meetings I said I felt that there would be one in the end. The last time I think I had a conversation about that was when you moved $50 million from the bottom line into the reserve. And so this amendment was based on recapturing that $50 million, if you will, that you were putting into the reserve and adding that to the line dealing with capital investments. So, Mr. Chairman, what that would do, and I'm kind of rounding the numbers, but for purposes of discussion, that would allow an additional $500 million in bonding
Ms. Fergus.
To your $100 million, a total of roughly $600 million in bonding. So I hope people were hearing me. I guess I didn't have the mic there. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that amendment. That would give you, in my view, more flexibility as the bill that you have moves forward, if it does, in fact, move forward here tonight. I've got a feeling at the $100 million level there's going to be a whole lot of discussion about the size of that bill and the lack of important projects that many people, and I have a strong feeling that it may be people on both sides of the aisle in the end when that hits the House floor, feel that there should be in a bonding bill this year. That's below what I talked about initially. If you recall, I referenced that we would hopefully have an $850 million bonding bill. So if this amendment goes on, when the bill hits the House floor, you could go somewhere between $100 million and $600 million and fit within the House budget resolution. So I move that amendment.
Okay, Representative Carlson moves the A35 amendment, and I'm told there's a technical correction on the amendment on page 1, line 5, that it should be insert 42,891,111,000. Is that correct, Mr. Marks?
That's correct.
Are you okay with that?
Mr. Chairman, we were doing this over the telephone, and so we ended up with an error in the number, but with Mr. Marks' good diligence, that correction, I'll incorporate that in my amendment.
All right. Discussion to the A35 amendment to the amendment. I guess, Representative Carlson, I would just say that, you know, going from $100 million to $600 million is a big jump. I guess I kind of belong to the school of saying that we had a big bonding bill last year, and I still sort of believe that the odd-numbered years should be reserved for the more emergency-type items. Also because, you know, the Capital Investment Committee traditionally does a lot of tours in the summer and fall to look at the different projects so they can better evaluate them, and suddenly doing $500 or $600 million of bonding here would mean doing an awful lot of projects that maybe the Capital Investment Committee hasn't had a chance to see. And so I think that we should really give them the opportunity this summer and fall to do that due diligence so we can come back next year and make sure that we've vetted all the projects that would be in the bill. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, as I pointed out, we're in the waning days of the session, and you know, it does take in the end 81 votes to pass a bonding bill. I indicated I was trying to give more flexibility. I would like to see a $600 million bonding bill in the end, or roughly that number, but it certainly gives you more flexibility on the House floor. As I said earlier, somewhere between $100 and $600 million. But certainly there's going to be a whole lot of discussion of members on both sides of the aisle that are going to see needed projects that they would like to see included in the bonding bill, and we won't have that opportunity probably to meet as a committee again. So they would fit as the bonding bill might be written or expanded to some level on the House floor when you move it out. So, by the way, I would like a roll call vote, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, well, there'll be a roll call vote on the A35 amendment to the amendment. Any other discussion to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll on the A35 amendment to the amendment.
Not Black.
No.
Albright.
No.
Anderson. Carlson.
Aye.
Cornish. Davids.
No.
Dean.
Nope.
Detmer.
No.
Draskowski.
No.
Garofalo.
No.
Gunther.
No.
Hagbarth.
No.
Hamilton.
No.
Hillstrom.
Yes.
Hornstein. Kahn. Lincheski. Liebling.
Yes.
Loon. Mahoney.
Yes.
McNamara. Murphy.
Yes.
Nornes. Pulowski.
Yes.
Pavi.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
Erdahl.
No.
Wagenius.
There be 9 ayes and 12 nays. The amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had the first one passed. I wouldn't be moving this one, but I do have a more modest amendment. You left with your amendment, there would be $4,703,000 left on the bottom line, and I would move that $4,703,000 up to the capital investment line with amendment number A36, I think? Yeah, amendment.
Yes, A36.
So I would move the A36 amendment, ask for a roll call vote. This would basically increase the opportunity for a slightly larger bonding bill to give you a little bit more room, probably a bonding bill in the neighborhood of $150 million.
All right. Representative Carls.
But including your $100, so we'd go to about $150.
Representative Carlson moves the A36 amendment. Discussion, Representative Detmer.
Is there an error on line 1.3 also?
Mr. Marks, is there a...
We double-checked that. I don't think that when we discovered the first one, I think this one is okay, but we'll rely on Mr. Marks.
It's moving $4.7 million. I think that's the right number.
Okay. Sounds like it's okay. Discussion to the A36 amendment to the amendment. I guess, Representative Carlson, I appreciate you being more flexible and coming down on this, but I guess still for some of the same reasons I said earlier that I guess I would oppose the amendment. Would encourage you to talk to the bonding chair, and I know that you and I had talked about that earlier today already to make sure that you had a opportunity to have your caucus bring forward projects that you feel are important for some consideration. And this bill, as it is before, going to be before us, may change in the coming day or two also. But for the reasons I said before on the other amendment, I guess I'd ask members to oppose the A36 amendment to the amendment. Representative Carlson.
Chair, when you say it could change in the next day or two, that was the point of my first amendment and this one as well. The clock is running. I think we're down to 50 hours, maybe 60, somewhere in that range. Some of our folks have it on their cell phone. I don't. How many hours remain? And so if this amendment does go on, it gives you some flexibility as the bonding bill is discussed. And it's a relatively modest amount. The amount is sitting there on the bottom line. When you talked about input, it's my understanding that Art Klockus was given a list, I've got it here, of the bonding projects, which you're going to be acting on in a few minutes, of $100 million. So there wasn't any room when we got that list. You're spending the full $100 million.
Well, what I guess I meant, Representative Carlson, is
there truly wasn't an opportunity in that regard, as I understand it. To the credit of the bonding committee chair, he did share with one of our lead on capital investment, but it's a list right here that totals the entire amount of the $100. Some
decisions to be made. And I guess
we were asked to endorse what you had already prepared, I guess, is the way I would put it.
Well, we'll have a chance to have Chair Torkelson talk about it. But what I meant when I said that statement is that, there may well be projects that after further discussion people decide maybe shouldn't be in here and perhaps other projects should be substituted. And so as the bill goes forward in the next day or two, we'll have an opportunity to have those discussions.
Mr. Chairman, the list that I have, and you probably have the same list, totals $98,747,000, so there wasn't a lot of room for suggestions.
Well, Representative Carlson, I meant the sense of suggestions where perhaps you'd suggest that you felt a project that was on the list was not meritorious and that there was another project that was a better project. But we'll have an opportunity to have those discussions when
I think
the bill
is
comes
the better
forward.
Direction, Mr. Chairman, to go, rather than my sitting here and knocking out projects that we might recommend that aren't favorable from our perspective. Would probably be a lot, knowing the sensitivity of capital investment bills, and I've carried many, and you did back. I carried them when we had the Appropriations Committee before we had capital investment, and I carried several. And it's always problematic when you're, once you have a list that's out there to knock somebody's project or some community's project off the list. It's much better and much easier to add one, and there's a modest number there, roughly $50 million additional dollars.
Well, thank you, Representative Carlson. I guess I remain unconvinced. Clerk will take the roll on the A36 amendment to the amendment.
Knobloch?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson? Carlson?
Aye.
Cornish? Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Jaskowski?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Heckbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hornstein? Kahn? Vincheski? Liebling?
Yes.
Loon?
Ms. Day, do you want to...
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara? Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis? Pelowski?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Ferkelson?
No.
Erdahl?
Yes. No.
Wagenius?
There being 9 ayes and 12 nays, the A36 amendment to the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I was just hopeful that you, now that we're about to conclude the session, that you'd give us at least one amendment.
Representative Nornis moves the A.
You know, I, well.
Over the past 5 months, but that be it as it is. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Representative Carlson. Well, members, we have the A31 amendment before us. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A31 budget resolution amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A31 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, the next item of business is Representative Torkelson and House File 622. Chair Torkelson moves that House File 622 be referred to the General Register. And members, we have a DE1 amendment that is a delete all amendment that really encompasses the full proposal. And so I guess I would ask that members would go along with putting that on to House File 622 so the bill can get into the shape the author desires. Chair Torkelson moves the DE1 amendment. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Chair Torkelson, could you basically briefly walk us through the DE1 amendment or House File 622 as it is now amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE1 amendment, which is now part of the bill, outlines the number of capital investment projects. Totaling nearly $100 million. I'll just briefly step through the projects off of the spreadsheet. First, we have the University of Minnesota project, the Wilmer Poultry Testing Laboratory, for $8.529 million. This project would be an important project to address the ongoing issue of avian influenza. Next, we have the Department of Natural Resources, the first project, the flood hazard mitigation project in Otter Tail County to address some high lake levels there that are causing serious flood damage to residents around some of the small lakes in Otter Tail County. Next, two projects are part of the disaster bill that is being carried by Representative Albright. A portion of that is bondable, and these next two projects are part of that effort to address disaster relief, flood hazard mitigation, and DNR facility and natural resource damage repair, $2.515 million and $2.14 million. The RIM conservation easements under the Board of Water and Soil Resources is also part of that disaster relief bill that is being carried by Representative Albright. The next item on line 16 under the Board of Water and Soil Resources deals with ongoing flood mitigation projects in the Minnesota River Basin, specifically Area 2. Under administration, we have two lines for the state capital restoration project. The first line item, security items, for $6.2 million is enough money to cover security items that have been outlined but not yet approved by the Capital Preservation Committee. That's why we put them on a separate line. There is some discussion going on in the committee about just how those items might proceed, and they have yet to make official approval of those items. That's why we put that on a separate line. Next, we have the out-of-scope items in the capital restoration project, the bulk of that being the space underneath the plaza and repair work on the plaza and steps leading up to the capital for $24.724 million. Next, under the Department of Transportation, we have local road program for $10.9 million and the local bridge program for $9.25 million. General obligation bonds from the Trunk Highway Fund. Next, the Minnesota Valley Regional Railroad Authority, $1 million, another ongoing project that needs money to keep it moving forward. Next, under the Department of Corrections, we have the Northeast Regional Corrections Center in St. Louis County. It's a detention center that does train the inmates there to process meat. The training side has been addressed in the, I believe, in the Ag Bill. This addresses needs for the facilities there that no longer meet or are close to falling short of meeting health department requirements. Finally, on the page, we have the Public Facilities Authority Wastewater Infrastructure Fund for $16.489 million. Mr. Chair, that is about it, except for the $100,000 in Minnesota management and budget fees or costs to issue the bonds. Also included in the bill are a number of corrections in the language in the bill, most of all of them to past year's bonding projects. I believe there, I won't read through them all, but I believe there are corrections to 8 or 10 different projects, most of it being language changes, language mistakes that were made in past bills. For instance, a street being named, get the wrong street being named in the bill. We have to get the right street in there. Bond council is pretty fussy about the language in a bonding bill, and the words all need to be correct, and there's a number of corrections here to get these projects, the language for the projects in the shape they need to be in so the projects can move forward. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Okay, thank you, Chair Torkelson. And I guess the members, I should tell you that there is a spreadsheet of the financial items that's in the bill that is in your packets. And I think maybe before we have you stand for questions, Chair Torkelson, I'll also entertain the A1 amendment to the Delete Everything amendment, which is now House File 622 as amended. Representative Albright moves the A1 amendment. Representative Albright, can you speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, these are additional items that came out of the House File 748 that should be included in the bond bill for this session.
And there is a separate spreadsheet, members, for the items that are in the A1 amendment that Representative Albright just referenced. Members, I guess just, I think everyone probably understands this, but this is a lot of the same items as was just recently passed on the House floor earlier today. It's the flood relief bill that we had before us that since we are now looking at having a bonding bill and a portion of it is bondable, we felt that we would carry it in the bonding bill. There is language so that if, for example, somehow both of these bills were to become law, we wouldn't be double spending these. So with that, is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just wanted to know from Chair Torkelson if the bonding committee has been to see the projects that are before us. So We have, you know, for example, this flood hazard mitigation in Otter Tail County, the Wilmer Poultry Testing Lab, any of the other items here. Has the committee gone to see these?
Excuse me, Representative Liebling, I'm wondering, we're on the A1 amendment right now,
oh.
And I'm wondering if we could take questions on the A1 amendment, and that's certainly an appropriate question you have, but if we could wait for the discussion of the bill for that.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, maybe I could just start by asking that about what's on the A1, and I don't have the actual amendment. It's just the spreadsheet, correct?
Oh, no, there is an amendment. There is an A1 amendment.
Thank you.
I don't have the amendment either.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. I have one. I thought it had been distributed. I'm very sorry.
Sure, you should have one.
And I do. All right. We're distributing the A1 amendment, members. Well, Representative Liebling, do you want to ask that question again in regard to the A1 amendment?
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, I guess having just gotten this in my hand, I don't really even know where these things are and what they are, and maybe Representative Torkelson could just kind of walk through this and tell us if you've been and if the committee's been to see these various things that are on this amendment spreadsheet, if you would.
Representative Liebling, are you asking... you also asked about information on the projects on this, and it's Representative Albright's amendment. Okay. Are you, I guess, not to put words in your mouth, but are you interested in getting information on the projects from Representative Albright, the author of the amendment, or did you have a question for Chair Torkelson?
Well, Mr. Chair, just from looking at the spreadsheet, and I suppose I can sit and read the amendment now that I have it, but looking at the spreadsheet, it doesn't tell me where these projects are. So I guess I'd like to know at least where they are, but I'm really interested to know, since we've had some discussion about the fact that the bonding committee won't be able to add projects because the committee hasn't had a chance to see them. And so I'm interested in knowing, first of all, where these are, but also whether the committee has had a chance to see them.
All right. Well, I think that the author of the amendment, Representative Albright, probably knows more about your question as to where they are. I suspect that Chair Torkelson knows more about your question regarding the committee. So I guess, who do you want to ask first?
Well, I guess I'd like to know where they are first, I guess, if Representative Albright.
All right. Representative Albright, if you could answer Representative Liebling's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your question, Representative Liebling, the contents of the A1 amendment really are a continuation of the House File 748 that we presented to the membership on the floor of the House this afternoon. And so just to reiterate the contents of that, there are 36 counties as well as three reservations that are included in that. And from a standpoint of the vetting process that we went through, I hope that you will accept my assurances that they have been vetted by not only the DNR, Bowser, but also by Homeland Security over the course of the last 11 months, that these have been properly vetted, properly scrutinized to make sure that they fulfill both Chapter A and Chapter B, 12A and Chapter 12B of the statutes, to make sure that they're in compliance with the authorship that Representative Pawlowski put forward a number of years ago.
And Representative Liebling, if I could have a page come forward, we actually had this, this bill before us in a different form here a few days ago, and one of the items they had was this map of where all the projects are. And okay. I guess Mr. Marks has a copy that I'll have the page bring over to you so you can maybe get a better sense statewide of where the projects are.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, thank you. That's helpful. It's jogging my memory about this, and I think we did this.
Fuller.
I think I kind of came in the middle of that discussion.
Okay.
And I recall now that I did get to see the map. So, Representative Albright, that's all that's in this amendment to the amendment is those flood and disaster relief projects.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wagenius, did you have a question? What's that? To the bill. Okay. Question to the amendment. Representative Carlson, I saw you raise your hand. Did you have a question to the amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, being that this was already passed in the form of House File 748, I'm trying to remember, was a Senate file substituted, or did we substitute into a Senate file?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chairman.
My understanding that it was on its way to the governor's desk, is that
House File 748 was passed out. We did not accept the Senate language, which was 699, I believe.
Okay, so they were looking to the governor's
desk? No, and the Senate file is not moving currently. I think it's still waiting for its second engrossment.
Okay.
Representative.
I was trying to figure out the status here.
Sure.
Where we were with the original bill. Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson.
These are all issues that have passed the House already. I find it rather interesting because when we look at the overall amendment, there's one, two, three, four items there that have passed the House already. So we're doing a lot of duplication here.
Representative Mahoney, did you have a question on the A1 amendment?
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and if Representative Albright could just explain to me. I'm looking at the bill, the A1 amendment. So you've got local road and bridge reconstruction, the Historical Society, Natural Resources, Board of Soil and Water, Water and Soil, and Economic Development, correct?
Representative Albright.
Representative Mahoney, Mr. Chair, thank you. That is correct, Representative Mahoney.
And Mr.
Representative Mahoney.
What's the total bonding that you're doing today? Because I'm looking at this spreadsheet and seeing $11 million at the bottom, and I'm totaling up the numbers. And Sister Benson would probably say I should have paid better attention in arithmetic, but it looks like it's a little different.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Mahoney. In some cases, don't believe that the bond proceed or the expenses are included in the A1 on the spreadsheet.
Representative O'Neill.
And I'm trying to quickly do the math in terms of consolidating some of the numbers here. I'm certainly happy to get back to you that during the meeting if you'd like.
Mr. Chair, I understand that these have been vetted, and we're going to move this forward. So, I'll catch up.
Representative Mahoney,
I'll catch up with one of the finance people to figure it out. If there was something I'm missing.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, I think I've got the answer to you. Otherwise, Representative Albright, do you have that? I'm told what it is that if you look at this. Some of it is general fund money, and some of it is bond fund money. And so the spreadsheet you see of $11 million only references the general fund money in the A1 amendment. The bond fund money was previously put into the other spreadsheet. And so it's this
trying to confuse this kid.
It is, well, Mr. I guess it is a little confusing. I will admit, I think you're observant to pick that up. But numbers are, higher because it's got both the bond fund and the general fund in it. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, there's $11 million from the general fund, but $800,000 from the state transportation fund.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last.
$800,000 from the state transportation fund.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
The A1 amendment. What's the total, if Representative Albright, what's the total dollar figure in the A1 amendment? General fund, bond, and bond fund. That's all I'm trying to figure out.
11.8.
7.8?
11.
11.8.
Ms. Dyson, do you have a number for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, you asked for the total dollar amount of the A1 amendment, all fund sources, correct? Okay. Quick arithmetic. It should be 22.4 136. So it's 11 million plus 9.36 6 million plus 800,000.
Thank you.
Right.
And
he was asking for the bond amount, correct? Or all funds.
Okay, so I think there was some confusion about the question of whether it was just one of the funds or all three of the funds that are in the bill. But you're saying, again, Ms. Dyson, the total amount in the bill for all the three different funds is how much again?
Mr. Chair, the total for the A1 amendment, which is the new Article 2 disaster relief, would be $22.136 million.
Okay. So, Representative Carlson.
I'm going by memory here, but then that would be the exact number that was in House File 748.
That is correct.
So I think it
Representative Carlson.
Be, Mr. Chair, clear then that we weren't just talking about the spreadsheet here of the 11 million. When the full amendment is before us, it was literally twice that.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay. Yeah. I think. Well, it was. This was the. I guess this was the general fund items and the other capital budget spreadsheet you had, which had the capital items in it, already had the bonding funds, and so this is essentially replacing what was in it. But I understand the confusion, Representative Carlson. I can see how it would be confusing.
Those are the ones that I referenced that I had marked that there are four on the other list that had already passed as well.
Okay.
So you have to take those four plus the $11 million on here, and you should arrive at something pretty close to $22,136, mm-hmm. according to my red pen math.
Yeah. Okay. Other discussion to the A1 amendment? See no further discussion. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, we now have the bill before us. Discussion to House File 622 as amended. Representative Liebling, you had a question before, I think.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And back to my question for Representative Torkelson about these various projects and whether the committee has been to see them, since that seems to be the linchpin of whether a project gets to be considered this session.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The committee has not been on any field trips or visits at this point. We have heard some of these issues in committee and had descriptions of them by experts in the various provisions. Your description as a linchpin is, I would say, a bit overstated, but certainly I do believe that there is value in the Capital Investment Committee touring projects all around the state, and that is something we do intend to do in the interim to prepare ourselves for next year's bonding bill.
Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Torkelson, and I also believe there's value in the committee going to see projects. I've never had the fortune of serving on that committee, but certainly colleagues who have found it to be very valuable. But what then distinguishes these projects that makes you think that it's okay to go ahead and move these forward as opposed to all the many others that I'm sure are out there that members have been bringing you, surely, that you felt that haven't been ready to move?
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. These projects were selected on the basis of urgency and appropriateness for this bonding bill at this time. Either in the case, like in the case of the Capital Restoration Project, if that project is going to continue on schedule and finish on time at the estimated cost, it needs to move ahead now. We are scheduled to get back in that building on a certain date, and if we don't get all the work done, we may have difficulty even moving in. Other projects, based on their need on ongoing basis, if they have needs for funds in the near future to keep the project moving forward, we've tried to address some of those. In the case of the avian flu project, the research center in Wilmer, that is a current emergency, maybe is too strong a term, but it's certainly an issue that deserves immediate attention, and that's why that one is on the bill. I could go through each project if you'd like to take the time, but that in general is the way these this was approached and the reasoning behind the selection of the projects.
And if I could just add to that, you know, I think other than the Capitol, which we all seem to be touring daily these days, a lot of the projects that are on here don't have a specific site to tour, but are a ongoing sort of project that we've had for many years, like the local road and bridge program or the WIF program, various flood mitigation programs. And so those are more ongoing programs that we have. I know in past history, I think probably put money into in every bonding bill going back many years, and there's not a specific site to see, I think, in most of those project areas. But Representative, we've got a few other people on the list. Representative Wagenius and then Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two different questions. One, on your Department of Transportation, your $21 million, how much of the road and bridge problem that we have does this solve? What percentage?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have a percentage figure for you. Representative Wagenius, as you know, there is some discussion as to just how big the issue is. But because this is aimed at local projects, the idea behind this is that we keep those local contractors working so that we maintain that capacity in our local bridge and local road construction projects. If we skip a year, those contractors tend to move on to other areas.
Representative Wagenius?
Well, it's hard to know what this means without context, and so you might have a high estimate that you believe is high and one that you believe is reasonable. So we should know the one you believe is reasonable. What percentage of the need does this solve? I think that's we talk a lot about inputs, but we need to have context, so we need to know what kind of outcomes we're getting. And I'm kind of missing that a little bit. So maybe by the time we see you again, we will know what the meaning of this is. Okay? All right, second question. You have flood hazard mitigation in Otter Tail County, and I remember hearing that in capital investment and surprised to see it here because I don't think there was a conclusion about why these particular lakes were rising. And so if we don't know, if we don't understand the problem, it feels premature to try to solve it.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since the presentation, we've consulted with DNR. DNR are the go-to experts on this, and they believe the project is valid and should proceed.
Well, that didn't answer my question. My question was, do we understand why these particular lakes are rising when in a lot of the state that is not what's happening?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would defer to the DNR, who believes that this project is valid and should move forward. I honestly don't know if anyone knows why the lakes are rising. It's because there's more water in them than there used to be, I guess.
Well, sometimes if you try to solve a problem without understanding it, you may exacerbate it. And that's seems to me that DNR needs to understand this problem of why just this small cluster of lakes and one part of a fairly sandy area are rising. It doesn't never made common sense, and we never did get an answer to that. So just a question.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I've got a couple of comments, but being that the capital restoration was mentioned, and I think the comment was something like this money is needed so that we can move in. It's my understanding that all or most of that $30 million is for exterior work, so that wouldn't prevent anything on the interior moving in. It's $20 million, as I look at my iPad here, $20 million for water infiltration settlement of the south stairs, $4.37 million for out-of-scope items, and I'm not sure exactly what that out of scope means. They've got it here at 437, and on your sheet that was handed out, it shows a much larger number for what they call out of scope. Maybe the chair can explain what that means when I get done here. But $6.2 million for capital security, $300,000 for bus loading and unloading. So the point is that virtually all or the vast majority of that is for exterior work, so there's not quite the emergency that I think was implied by we wouldn't be able to move in unless this was moving forward currently. But the other question I have was the amendment that we have before us for the bill. Did that go, Representative Torkelson, before the Capital Investment Committee? This particular list, and was it voted on in the capital investment? And I'm just curious as to what kind of transparency there has been as this list of almost $100 million is put together, because our caucus, to the best of my knowledge, had no input. It's my understanding that staff and Representative Torkelson gave our lead a copy of this proposal today, mid-afternoon. Even though you said we could make suggestions, and we talked about that earlier, but obviously when you've got $100 million and the list is complete, that's pretty hard to make any suggestions. So this is one bill that requires 81 votes, and it's vitally important, as you and I both know, that both sides of the aisle be involved and consulted, and that there be projects that are balanced to some degree between the districts of the two caucuses. I mean, that's the history of capital investment. That's why we have to make sure it's well balanced. And so if Representative Torkelson could comment then about what the history of these projects are as it comes before us, and whether it was given any blessing in the Capital Investment Committee as that list was finalized.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson. First, I'd
sure
like to backtrack to your original question, which I think I can still remember, dealt with the capital restoration project. Approximately, I don't have my sheet in front of me delineating all those projects, but approximately $20 million of that project is to restore the space under the plaza, which is space that is intended to be occupied. And so that there was more damage in that area from water infiltration than was originally suspected. So when they were able to open up those spaces, they found the additional water damage. And in order to make those spaces occupiable, they needed to, I don't know if that's a word. Is that a word, Mr. Chair, occupiable?
Well, I think we know what you mean.
Okay.
Before occupied.
Sorry about my English. They needed that $20 million goes towards working on the plaza, getting the water issues straightened out, and then making those spaces useful at the completion of the remodeling project. You are correct that the security items, many of them are exterior, but they do include things like the steps leading up to the Capitol, which are used by most everyone who comes to visit. So they are really important to the project, and I believe it's worthy that they be included in this bill. Next to your question about...
Chairman, if I may.
Sure, I'm Representative Carlson.
That $30 million shouldn't be done at all. I was talking about the timing, whether these needed to be completed to occupy the building. And you're saying that there may be some of that is needed. The bill has to go to the House floor, so we can check on what is totally exterior and what is needed for occupation. My only point was that the timing wasn't quite as critical if it was all exterior with the limited information that I had. But I we'll defer to getting more information between now and the House floor. So I just want to make it clear, I'm not arguing about doing these things at some point. It's how much of an emergency they are.
Thank you, Representative Carlson, and Mr. Chair, thank you. I did consult with the administration about that same topic, because I also believe that, for instance, the $6.2 million security could be delayed until next year. That would have been my preference. They assured me that the funding needed to be put in place now so that they could get the contracts in place so that they could meet the end date for the capital project. They need to do the work while these folks are here on site and available. This is highly specialized work in many cases, and that's that was the message I got from them. You certainly are free to consult with them yourself and see if they tell you the same, give you the same information they gave to me.
So we'd like to adopt the House language on that.
Representative Lincheski, then Erdahl and Mahoney.
I had that second part of the question about transparency.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I thought you were
we
done.
Ended up
okay.
Talking about what was needed for the capital, and there's been rather broad support for the capital. I'm not arguing about supporting it. I was just talking about timing and one thing or another. But
okay, Representative Carlson.
I did ask if the bill had been before the Capital Investment Committee, voted on by the Capital Investment Committee. Is this strictly the chairman's bill being presented for the first time? I just want to know a little bit of the history here for transparency purposes.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson. It has not been voted on by the full committee. I didn't have a target until this morning. Representative Carlson, it's hard to assemble and bring a bill to committee when you don't have a target. Some of the projects in here, not all, but many of the projects in here were heard before the committee, so they have information about them. Other projects like the Wilmer Poultry Testing Laboratory, I believe we have talked about on the House floor to a certain degree, and we all know the avian flu epidemic is something that has occurred in just the last couple of months. I've already explained some of the logic behind some of these projects. Many of them are not specific to any district. Local road and bridge funds go throughout the state, for instance. So I believe we've done a pretty good job here. I know time is short. I wish I had more time to bring this all to the committee, but we are at a rather late hour on the clock.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson.
The CIO tried to give you more time. We tried repeatedly to talk about the capital investment bill in here. I think we have an unfortunate situation relative to transparency when it does come together this late, and it was a concern of mine, at least, all along, that we should have been talking more about capital investment than what we are here tonight. But I'll stop there. I think you had other questions and comments.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, Chair Torkelson, can you tell me, did the governor help create this?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, no.
Okay.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, I guess just another question, and, you know, I don't serve on your committee, so I don't know what's really happened there, but Representative Carlson was talking about how in the past there's been a caucus, you know, attempt to equal provisions out. And, you know, there's been another way that past bonding chairs in both parties have structured bonding bills independent from the price tag, and that is suburban, metro, rural. And I heard the talk about the capital, but, you know, I was trying to look through it, and, you know, I hadn't seen it until it was here. So, you know, I was just trying to do a rough calculation, and my county, you know, one of 87 counties, has 23% of the state's population, and it contributes a significantly higher percentage of all the taxes in the state than 23%. So it, you know, it pays a significantly higher chunk for the bonding bill for the whole state. And you know, I will say my constituents are happy to do that. I mean, when there's a flood problem or a need in greater Minnesota or northern Minnesota or southern Minnesota or downtown Minneapolis or a suburb or whatever, you know, we all do that together. But, you know, in just looking at this, other than a few tiny provisions, you know, I see very little spent in Hennepin County. And you know, the history around here has been that Hennepin County always gets the short end of the stick every time. It always gets the smallest percentage in the bonding bill, but it's usually not this short of a stick. And I'm wondering if you can help me, you know, this isn't, I think you know, Chair Torkelson, this isn't a partisan comment. You know, our county is Representative Loons and Representative Andersons and Pepins and Pews and Hertas and Smith, and you know, there's just a lot of us. I think there's 28 House members, Mr. Chair, of 134 who represent our county. And I'm kind of missing, like I said, other than a few very tiny provisions, what the 1.2 million people who live in Hennepin County would get if this bill were to pass out of this bill.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lincheski. I realize that this is an ongoing concern in bonding bills. Different people interpret them in different ways as to how fair they are. Part of the issue here is this is a rather small bonding bill compared to many, and I would say stay tuned. I will do my best in the future to address those regional concerns that are involved in any bonding bill. I would add that my wife is in town today and doing a little shopping. She's probably contributing via the shopping opportunities in your district.
Chair Lincheski, the more questions you ask him, the more his wife is likely to contribute. Go ahead.
You know, except for, you know, I know people like to say that, but those receipts that happen at the Mall of America actually don't go to the city of Bloomington or to Hennepin County. Go to the state. And they buy all the projects in the state. So the bonding bill is where people often get, you know, some semblance of understanding that if they are, let's say, 23% of the population, they might get, you know, some people would say they should get 23% of the money, and others would even say they should get a higher percentage than that because they're contributing significantly more than that. I have been, you know, I've understood it, and I've seen it in both parties, how it's more, you know, you're shooting for 10% or 15, but, you know, not one or two. That gets really hard, I think, bipartisanly for all those legislators who represent the county to take a vote like this when it gets to the floor. But, you know, as I've stated, my constituents have understood that when we have problems in Minnesota, we need to fix them together. But, you know, they also don't want to be made a fool of, so there needs to be a balance there. And I guess I'll just stay tuned to learn more as this goes on. I'm just speaking for one of the seven metro counties, and I think the other six could make a very similar argument. But we, you know, we are the largest, so I'm hoping as the negotiations continue, we'll see some regional balance in the bonding bill as it comes together. And I know Chair Torkelson has been very gracious to say he will eventually come out and look at some projects in my district, and I'm looking forward to that. But I will just tell people that I'm not really trying to play a game with it. I have been a consistent yes vote for bonding bills almost the entire time I've been here, no matter, you know, which party put them together. But I think this one has a problem that it's not only so small, it's so unbalanced that, and if the governor didn't even work on it, I think there's a number of things going on here that, you know, we still have a few days and hopefully things will change, but I just wanted to, you know, put that on the record. And again, I can't wait till you get to Southern Hennepin County to tour some projects, so thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you. And just responding a little bit, first of all, I think in next year we have the large bonding bill historically, and that's where I think we pay a lot more attention to balance. I mean, this is supposed to be about critical needs, and critical needs don't know geography. You know, the balance, I think, you know, should be much more in tune next year. Now, in terms of needs, when we talk about the capital, you know, I'm a member of the Capital Restoration Committee. We were told that these expenses needed to be done this year, and, you know, talking about, you know, the governor's input in this bill, well, I'll just correct Representative Torkelson slightly in that the funds in this bill for the capital restoration were voted on by our capital restoration commission, chaired by the governor, who did vote for it. So therefore, at least a portion of this bill that Representative Torkelson has was approved and voted on by the governor himself.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions on the Minnesota Poultry Testing Lab in Willmar. I've just never heard of it. I mean, you said it was spoken to on the floor, and I don't remember hearing anything about it on the floor. So could you fill me in? I thought most of the testing was done at the U of M, and I don't know if this is a design, construct, furnish, and equip the expansion and renovation. So anything you can do to fill me in on it, I would appreciate it.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney. The poultry testing lab in Willmar is where when birds are sick, they are sent for testing to verify what disease they have. The lab is older and needs renovation, has been under a very heavy use recently because of the avian flu outbreak, and will continue probably because we think this avian flu is not going away. Over the long run, we expect there may be reoccurrences here in Minnesota, and there's an ongoing need to test these birds for disease, and that happens in Willmar.
Representative Mahoney.
I was under the impression most of the avian flu testing was done at the U. I'm almost pretty sure of that one, but what I'd like to understand is, I mean, where is it in Willmar? I've been out there many times, and I've been to the Twin West campus and all the other places out there. Is it some hidden barn out in the back 40 someplace? Or, I mean, I've never heard of it, so I guess I'm just trying to figure out, it's a $9 million investment. I'm not opposed to figuring out the avian flu. I think it's what we're going to have to do. Poultry is a huge issue here in the state, and, you know, you have a variety of problems with it. You don't have the veterinarians. Little dogs in suburbs, veterinarians make a whole lot more than farm veterinarians. So I do understand the problem you have out there with that. So anything more that you could tell me on that? Because, again, I mean, how long has this lab been around? And is this the first time we've ever tried to fix this lab up? It took a crisis for us to actually start looking at how we're going to serve greater Minnesota.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not know the history of the lab. I would like to remind you that these are both university facilities, both the facility here in St. Paul and this facility in Willmar. This is a request of the University of Minnesota. It's one of their highest priorities. I'm responding to that request. As to the exact location of the lab, I've never been there, Representative Mahoney. If you want to jump in the car with me someday and go down and see some sick turkeys, I'd be glad to take you along.
I typically smoke cigars in my car, so we could drive separately, though. Unless you like cigars.
Perhaps we could take my motorcycle.
No.
You can ride.
No. I don't do motorcycles.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, under the Public Facilities Authority, we usually have state money to maximize the federal money, and we usually know the number of projects that will be qualify, and are we sticking to the projects by their rating?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not bring the PFA list with me. Their request was for $20 million. We are shy of that request, so I'm confident that they do have the appropriate matching funds in place, and these projects are ready to go. These are not, I think you're familiar with their prioritization process. They will do as many projects as they have money for. They had requested, as I said, $20 million this go-around. That would have gotten them all the way down the list as far as they felt they needed to go. This will be a little short of that, but it's at least a step, a pretty good-sized step in the right direction.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, is there any other way that we can make that other $4 million up, other than going back and reconsidering Representative Carlson's motion?
Chair Torkelson.
So this,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I suppose we could swipe some money from something else, some other deserving project. But as of now, my target is $100 million, and that's what I have been given to work with. I would add, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, that I didn't bring the spreadsheet where I have that delineated, but many of these projects were part of the governor's bonding bill. So when I say the governor was not involved, he was not involved with the selection of these projects, but the governor has and his staff have been involved with apparently with vetting these projects, because many of them were on the governor's list of requested projects.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy,
I'm asking these questions because I feel that, you know, of all these things, that is would be, if I had to prioritize, the Public Facilities Authority would be my first priority, because I think it does the most good and it's balanced across the state, and those projects are, you know, the cities and townships and counties that receive money from the Public Facilities Authority, usually through the loans or to grants, are correcting definite groundwater problems and providing service to these communities, and it's balanced across the state, and it goes back to all our discussion that we've had tonight. And I really wish we could find that other $4 million.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to encourage a no vote. The chair of the Capital Investment Committee has implied that maybe things could get better, but he'll leave this committee with a low target, so he won't be able to make them better on the House floor. He mentioned just a moment ago that he had gotten, unfortunately, a low target. This is the committee that sets the targets for the House, and so that could have been made better. I just wanted to comment, you know, there's another form of balance in emergency. And by the way, we debated this about small bills, large bills, second year. There is a long history of a significant bill each and every year in recent years. I think that remains, at least in my view, a bit of a myth that, that you don't do a large bonding bill. And I think I shared with the committee earlier in the session what the history had been in the last decade or more. We did have a conversation about balance. Representative Lincheski made some good points, and one thing that's very lacking here, and usually about 30% of a bonding bill, regardless of size, maybe 40% in many years, is higher education. And when we talked about emergency kinds of things, I know both systems had HEPA requests. Speaking of spending things spread around the state, that's one thing that happens with HEPA. For those in the audience who may not know what I'm referring to, most places might refer to that as repair and betterment. But if you have a leaky roof, you better fix it this year rather than next year. If you have tuck pointing issues, you better fix it this year rather than next year. So there are a lot of issues in other parts of state government. I'm just using higher education as one example. Mr. Chairman, you represent a really a major center of education, a tech college, a state university. I think you even have a DNR facility there, if I recall, in St. Cloud. You know, you have a lot of facilities around the state that need that appropriation to keep up on the repairs. Otherwise, they simply cost you more in the future. And there's not a single item on the list here that would provide anything for higher education. I'm not one that has one an institution in my community, but I certainly am very interested in them because I provide students to probably virtually every higher education system in the state of Minnesota, you know, from my area. I shouldn't say I provide them,
Chair
my community
says
provides
three.
Them. But I would encourage a no vote. We could have a better bill. And if it's successful in moving out of committee at this point, you simply need a majority vote. You do need 81 on the House floor, and I think you're going to have some tough sledding the way this bill is laid out to get to 81.
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the sheet with me that delineates the what was passed in the first year of the past biennium, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe there was no HEPR in your party's bill in the first year of the last biennium. I wouldn't swear to that without getting the sheet in front of me, but I know it was mostly the capital renovation project and some limited disaster relief, if I remember correct. So this is not unprecedented. Representative Carlson, your party did much the same thing.
Representative Carlson.
Sometimes asked, and I spent many years on the Capital Investment Committee and appropriations before we had one. The question would have to be what the request was from, in the case of the systems and so on, for HEPR that particular year. I would have to look at the bill, but I do know that both systems were requesting HEPR this year.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I would be surprised if their request was zero. And I think you would be.
I would have to take a look. I'm not denying that one way or the other, but I'm just saying that I don't recall whether they had a request or not.
See, no further discussion. Representative Torkelson renews. Renews his motion that House File 622, as amended, be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll on the bill. Yes.
Albright.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Cornish.
Yes.
David.
Yes.
Dean.
Detmer. Yes.
Draskowski.
Aye.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Gunther.
Yes.
Hackbarth. Hamilton.
Yes.
Hillstrom.
No.
Hornstein. Kahn. Lincheski. Liebling.
No.
Loon. Mahoney.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
Murphy.
No.
Nornis. Pulowski.
As adopted.
Poppy.
No. As amended. Excuse me, Senator Eakin.
Torkelson.
Yes.
All those in favor say aye.
Erdahl.
Yes.
Wagenius.
R76. Article 20. The TCF.
There being 14 ayes and 9 nays, House File 622, as amended, is referred to the General Register. All right, the final item that we have, and thank you for your patience, Representative O'Driscoll, is Senate File 1398. And we do have, has that amendment to Senate File 1398 been passed out, Mr. Stone, do you know? Yeah. Okay, we've got an amendment to pass out to it. While that's going on, the chair will move that Senate File 1398 be referred to the General Register. And maybe while the amendment's being passed out, Representative O'Driscoll, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. I don't think you've been before us before. Maybe you can describe Senate File 1398.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the amendment that we're considering this evening is going to be to the 2015 Omnibus Pension Bill. And there's, as folks who are on this committee know and are veterans to the legislature, the Pension Commission is put in place to help oversee and to make recommendations to the legislature at large about pension corrections, pension-related issues. And one of the things that in addition to many of the standard things that we would see, technical language cleanup, constituent-related issues, this year we were looking at the issue of MRF, the Minneapolis Employer Retirement Fund. A number of years ago, those being 2009, the MRF was put under the administration of the PERA folks, and they were going to continue to administer that until such time that it received an 80% funding level. and at that time it would be merged into PERA. This year we have received that 80% funding level through a number of things, market returns being one, and contributions by employers and the state of Minnesota to help stabilize those benefits for retirees. What we found out as a result of the merger of MRF into PERA, an actuarial review was done that said that the combined $51 million that had previously been paid and split between the state of Minnesota paying $24 million per year and the city of Minneapolis paying $27 million plus approximately $4 million more for administrative costs for a total of $31 million was no longer needed. PERA had an actuarial evaluation done, and the number was determined to be $37 million would be a more appropriate going forward number. As the Pension Commission, doing its due diligence, had asked its independent actuary to review the results from the PERA evaluation, and they also concurred with the methodology that was used on that particular evaluation of being $37 million. And so what had happened in the Pension Commission is Representative Thiessen had offered, who's a member of the commission, had offered an amendment that would have brought that split down for the city of Minneapolis to $21 million and the state of Minnesota to $16 million. In the House state government finance bill, that $37 million was looked to be split $31 for the city of Minneapolis, in essence keeping them at the same contribution level for the next 2 years as they had been for the previous years prior to the merger, and that number would reduce to $6 million for the next 2 years for the state of Minnesota. What had happened is we had amended this bill in the state government finance committee to do that $31 million, $6 million split. As a part of the agreement that was reached for the state government finance bill, the $31 million and $6 million are to be used for the next fiscal year for the numbers splits between the city of Minneapolis at all employers and the state of Minnesota. And then for the remaining years, we would refer to the split that was offered by the Thiessen Amendment during the Pension Commission, which would be that $16 million for the state of Minnesota and $21 million. Both parties would be experiencing some savings. The savings would be at different amounts and different levels for the participants, simply depending upon where they are on that spectrum. And so, Mr. Chair, we're looking to be able to amend the pension bill and to move forward with that language. So, again, in summary, what we would be looking at is doing a modification for the next 2 years to the upcoming biennium that we're working on to a $31 million split to the city of Minneapolis, $6 million split to the state of Minnesota, and then moving forward with the Pension Commission's recommendations for the remainder of the anticipated investment needed to be able to continue to pay the benefits to the MRF employees. Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, members, we have the A2 amendment in front of us, and I think that Representative O'Driscoll has described, in addition to some of the items in Senate File 1398, what was in the A2 amendment. So I'll formally move the A2 amendment. And just do have a question, Representative O'Driscoll. Is it my understanding, do you say that the ongoing funds for future years, that is something that the Pension Commission supported and that was authored by Representative Thiessen?
Mr. Chair, yes. What had happened was we were looking at this information laid on in our work in the Pension Commission, and the MRF actuarial evaluation was done, and Representative Thiessen did offer an amendment that would take the revised number of $37 million that PERA anticipated that they would need and put that at a split of $16 million for the state of Minnesota and $21 million for the city of Minneapolis at all employers. And on a voice vote, that passed unanimously, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Is there discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, you keep saying the city of Minneapolis, but there's more than the city of Minneapolis. Am I correct?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, that's why I refer to it as the city of Minneapolis at all employers, because it would include also the MAC, some school district, and other residual employers when the fund was closed, and then those new employees were moved to the PERA program.
And Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, when that happened, there was a proportional share, was there not, with the employers, and based on the number of workers that had been covered by the MRF participants that had been covered by these various employers?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, you are correct. That split was never a part of the statute. That was worked out between the city of Minneapolis and those other employing entities. And in essence, a check was delivered to PERA for the amount that was necessary under state law to be able to meet that. But what happened under the proposed $31 million is those employers who would be paying that $27 would still pay that, and the administrative costs that the city of Minneapolis would be paying would be added into that 31. Still the same amount that is being paid by the city of Minneapolis and the other employing entities and the administrative costs. I would not want to speak for the city of Minneapolis and those other employing entities if they have negotiated something different or what have you, because that's outside of the scope of what the Pension Commission is looking at. The Pension Commission and PERA want to just ensure that the dollars are, that are needed are collected and paid. That other decision has been left to the employers as to the split.
Okay. And Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, then proportionately, will this change the amounts of money to get that, to keep that $31 million, or the amount of money that the employers are paying? Will that proportionally, will that change the amounts of money that the various employers might have to contribute?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, to your question, the $31 million really represents the $27 that's already paid plus the $4 that Minneapolis pays. So my assumption would be that the city of Minneapolis would still be paying the $4 million for the administrative costs, and then the other $27 would be prorated back to the employers like it is right now. However, again, I'm not going to speak for the city of Minneapolis on how they work with the other employing entities to come up with that $27
million. The $27.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, one thing I've learned through this process and my new assignment this year of being the lead on the K early 12 education fund comes from the lessons that Ms. Kelleher has told me about the school boards association, that pension monies have to come out of usually the formula or the per pupil unit money that the school districts get from the state. And one of my questions in this clarification of how this happened between, and it happened after it left the pension committee, and this is my first chance to ask these questions, but will the school children have to pay more money because of this reapportionment of the employer's amount to the MRF?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Murphy, like yourself, I had also been visited by Ms. Kelleher, having the same kinds of questions and concerns. And those are very founded concerns. This pension group with the MRF folks who are being merged in is a closed fund. It means that every day that goes by, there are fewer people who are paying into that fund. And PERA and the principles that are observed generally by the Pension Commission are concerned about not having one group or one employing group, be it a city group, a county group, a school district group, subsidizing or paying more or paying less than their fair share. What PERA has told us is that they have a method in which to track the 3,800 plus or minus individuals that are in here to determine the amount of benefits that are being paid out based on the dollars that are coming in and the return, and that they would keep the Pension Commission advised as to whether one of three things is happening. It's still good, the numbers are working. Number two, maybe we're getting better returns and we don't need as much, so that number could be adjusted. And the third would be it's falling short, and advise the Pension Commission of a formula or and or dollar change that would be necessary. It is not the intention of the Pension Commission or my intentions that the PERA general fund would in any way subsidize nor would I expect the MRF folks to pay more or less than what would be owed for that particular group.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, how long is this amendment then addresses a global agreement, and we're going to go back to the way of paying the amount of money in 2 years, or right?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask if Representative Murphy could restate the question.
We're going back, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
We're going back to the proposal as it left the Pension Commission.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
That is correct. The in the timeline that was looked at and anticipated to reach full vesting on this, the first 2 years of that timeline would be the exception to the rule of what the Pension Commission did. The remaining years would be the recommendations from the Pension Commission, which were found in the Thiessen Amendment.
And
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll. Do you think that the people that are receiving benefits from MRF or the new people that will become beneficiaries of MRF, will they ever be able to qualify for a cost of living increase?
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, if I could, I would like to ask that the policy director from PERA come down and share in the discussion as well. Ms. Shana Jones is here. Is here, and she can speak to the question that Representative Murphy has raised.
All right, Ms. Jones, would come forward. Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, as she's coming forward, Representative O'Driscoll, when do you feel that the MRF people will be completely merged?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I think that's also a very good question for the policy director from PERA, Ms. Jones, to she can come to the testifying table if that's the wishes of the chair.
Sure.
To answer both of those questions, because those are more the administrative in charges of the folks over at PERA.
Ms. Jones, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, members, Shana Jones, Policy Director at PERA. And if I may, I'd like to ask Representative Murphy to ask the question just once more. I was back a little bit.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Ms. Jones, my first question was, when do you anticipate, or do you ever anticipate, that the people that are members of the MRF, will they ever qualify for a benefit or a cost of living benefit?
Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we have assumptions that predict what the future holds, and when we assume an 8.5% rate of return, which we are changing this year, we assume that we'll start paying an adjustment for our entire plan, because they're now part of our larger general plan, on a date specific. That's not necessarily representative of reality, but rather the assumption today. So if we lower that rate of return assumption to 8, it now takes us longer in our assumptions to reach a full funding level where that cost of living adjustment would be produced. So again, do we anticipate that they'll receive a cost of living adjustment? Yes, we do. We anticipate that it's approximately 10 years later because of our lowering of the assumptions. But again, that's an assumption, and reality will prevail. So in our valuation that's done every fiscal year, we look at what the last year of reality has done, and we reset and continue to project. So we project that they will get an increase, but again, reality will prevail. And when we hit 90% funded, the entire general plan will experience an increase in their cost of living adjustment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Jones. Then when do you anticipate that the full merger will have taken place.
Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the full merger actually took place January 1st of 2015. The statutes that were drafted and codified into law in 2010 required that we do cleanup language a little after the fact, which is what we're doing now, but they officially merged and are now the former MRF members as of January 1st.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the actuarial assumptions that we talked about, and with the 8% that we're going down to as a recommendation of the Pension Commission, how long will that take place?
Ms. Jones.
What is the assumption year that we will be good?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, in the actuary's projections for our general plan, which is what will really prevail for all members that are in that plan, including former MRF members, assuming an 8.5% rate of return going forward, we would pay out a 2.5% cost of living adjustment in 2027. Assuming an 8% rate of return going forward, that would be 2037. And again, that's represented for our entire plan, and the caveat is that the actuary did that using the GASB rate of return assumption, which is 7.9. So it's a rough date.
So,
Representative Murphy.
Ms. Jones, so 2037 with the 8.8%?
Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that is our general plan, our big plan that they're now part of.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Jones, the people that were in the general plan in December and the people that are all in the general plan today, the people that are in the new people that came into the general plan through that had been MRF, but now they're fully qualified and paid for. The people that were in the general plan are not subsidizing in any way the MRF people. Am I correct?
Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, you are correct. That's what the $37 million total contribution for the unfunded liabilities attributable to the former MRF division insures.
And so
Representative Murphy.
Ms. Chair, Ms. Jones, so the plan is on track and is not being driven off track by anything that is in the amendment or in the bill that is before us that was recommended by the Pension Commission, the Government Operations Committee, and the State Government Finance Committee.
Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, as long as we have $37 million per year until 2031, we will continue to ensure that we're on track as we intended to be in our in the plan in its entirety, including the former MRF members. And this amendment provides $37 million per year.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, for further clarification point, I just wanted to clarify that on the Pension Commission, I thought it was a better idea than to stop at the $37 million. I thought it was better to continue with a larger amount, preferably the $51 million. Was it $51 million? And I spoke to that.
So,
but
with that, there is
surprisingly, I lost.
No other business before the committee,
and I haven't forgotten it, but I've let it go.
The Senate staff who has
don't hold a grudge.
Julie,
but I thought we needed more money to continue in to really be sure that we were stabilizing the plan. And so that the recipients of either the general the total general PERA now would have no idea that their benefits were being threatened because of this merger. Representative O'Driscoll said that at the State Government Finance Committee that what has been promised is will continue to be promised, and the state has always made good on their promises. And Ms. Jones now in her answers has told us that the plan is with the $37 million that we will be able to become fully funded, even though we're going from 8.5 assumption down to 8 assumption. And that's what this is all about. I just want to say one more time that the people that are, as far as I understand it, that everybody's benefits will continue. It might take a longer time for cost of living increases to come by. But as best as we can tell, with those of us that heard in the Pension Commission, we should be stable.
Is there any other discussion to the A2 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Members, we have the bill before us as amended, Senate File 1398. I have discussion to the bill. Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I'm glad Chair Drazkowski is still here because I want to ask about a tax provision that's in this bill and why it didn't go to taxes. And for members who might want to look, and for Chair Drazkowski, because this tax account is in his division of the tax committee. It's Article 6 of the bill, page 53. And, I think it's probably a good idea, but it's permanent spending in a tax area that this bill never went to the tax committee. And, I'm not sure if people want to provide the Senate with a tax vehicle, but maybe that's what the plan is here, so they can send some over your way, and you'll have to deal with that. But Article 6 is, as members can see, on line 53.13, what's happening here is it's making the pension aid that, again, is in Chair Drazkowski and has been, that account has been in the tax committee the entire time I've been here. It's been in, it's in his committee, and so it's a permanent spending for the police and firefighter pension aids. And so for members who aren't familiar with this in taxes, we often say in taxes there are legislators who will say, I don't get local government aid, or I don't get fill in the blank, I don't get anything. And every district gets this pension aid. It's a tax item, and it's being carried in the pension bill. I don't know why. I checked, and I understand that even the nonpartisan pension staff testified the bill would need to go to taxes if this stayed in there. That was Larry Martin had stated that on the record during the hearing. And then I also got the accounts here that you Chair Knobloch, put together for the year. And I know Mr. Marks probably has them too, but unless they were amended, the account for the aids and credits for these pension aids are in the purview of the tax committee and have been the entire time I've been here, as I've said. So, maybe Chair Drazkowski, I know Chair Davids was here, he's now gone, or the author or Chair Knobloch can tell me what's going on here now, why we have a tax provision here, or are we going to move to send this bill to taxes, and is that going to meet tonight? I did just see the email that the speaker has now said we're not on the floor till midnight, and I know rules or hearing notices of meetings have been waived, so the tax committee could certainly meet next, but I just want to understand what's going on here.
Well, I guess I don't know if any of the other members that were referenced want to comment on it. Otherwise, I guess I would just say I don't know under the rules, Representative Lincheski, I guess I'd have to consult them on whether, this is an item that is carried in the tax committee, but I don't know that it is a tax provision in the sense of income tax or sales tax or something like that. I guess I would defer, obviously, to any of the other members that have more experience with that, and Representative Lincheski, you're one of them, but I guess to me, this is a pension bill, and this is an article about pensions, and it would seem to be appropriate that it be in the pension bill, and I don't know that that necessarily means it has to go to the tax committee, because I don't know that there are any particular tax implications to it that are any different than any other pension items. But Representative Lencheski, well, perhaps you can enlighten me.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, and if you look at the chapter of law, you know, 423, that's the tax area. And for people who doubt that these aids aren't tax items, I mean, so what the local pension, I don't have the list in front of me, but the aids that Chair Drazkowski is in charge of are things like border cities aid, disparity aid, local government aid, fiscal disparities, county program aid. These are the purview of his committee. Decisions made in these aids are solely belong in the tax committee. So if people now want to make an argument that that's not the case, I encourage you to get the statute book out and take a look. You know, you, Mr. Chair, you have the authority, I guess, to do whatever you want. Tax amendments, of course, will be germane to this bill. And, of course, if it gets sent over to the Senate, you have a different issue. That's your majority's issue. I think Senator Bach would be very happy for you to do that for him, so that he has an ability to send you a file back before adjournment. But, you know, I think there is... I can't see any argument that this could possibly not be anything other than what I've stated. Had it gone to taxes, I think it's just fine. So, you know, transportation taxes and health care taxes and all the taxes that people have looked at this year, you know, the tax chair gets to decide. You can either send the bill through taxes and Chair Davids can pull the provisions out and carry them in the tax bill, like he did to Chair Dean. He removed the premium tax credit for the HHS bill, and he carried it in the tax bill. He removed the provider tax that was in the HHS bill, and he carried it in the tax bill. Or he could have sent that bill out with them and then after the tax committee having heard it. Similarly, in the education bill, many of the tax provisions were removed and carried in the tax bill. In the transportation bill, all kinds of provisions were removed and carried in the tax bill. Now we have a tax provision sitting in a pension bill, and I think the easy solution is to have the tax committee meet tonight or tomorrow and hear the provision and let Chair Drazkowski and Chair Davids think through if they believe that this should happen. I mean, it's not a thing that doesn't cost money. It's like, you know, one way to think about it. So let's say we're appropriating local government aid to the tune of $507 million a year, and you're putting in law we're going to do that for all time. I mean, there's a cost to that. And, you know, I mean, you have the authority, Mr. Chair, to do whatever you want, but I think you should expect some loud protest as we get to the floor. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I do thank you for bringing it to our attention, Representative Lencheski. I don't think that we are in any danger of the Senate firing something back at us, since this is, in fact, a Senate file. So all that can happen is for us to send it to them and for them to either pass it on to the governor or refuse to concur. I don't know. Chair Drazkowski, do you have any thing you want to say on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't remember a hearing request coming for this particular provision, and in learning what I can about it at this point, it appears, and I talked to staff, that this doesn't do anything to change tax rates or in any way change tax policy. There's some restructuring of accounts on lines 53.5 and 6. But other than that, I don't see any reason, Mr. Chair, that this would have to come through the tax area for a decision. It is an item that's that is in a tax area of statutes, but it's not something that, yeah, I... Anyway, that's all I can offer, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, while you're reading the rules.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to be fair, Representative Lencheski. Representative Lencheski, go ahead.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, and, you know, again, you can do whatever you want. And the rules, as since you've got them in your hand, I'm not looking at them. I don't have mine. But you know, I will remind members that whether something goes to taxes or not is not if there's a rate change, as Chair Drazkowski just said, or if a tax goes up or down. If there's a change to tax policy that doesn't cost a nickel, still goes to tax committee. And in fact, this actually does cost a nickel. So let me give you a tax corollary. So in the omnibus tax bill that the House carried this year, there was a provision to give all Minnesotans who are in the income tax system an increased personal exemption deduction. I think that provision alone costs, Chair Drazkowski can help me, I want to say $400 million. We offered an amendment on the House floor as a minority to not make that a two-year tax cut for everybody, but to make it permanent. Now, part of the reason that didn't pass is because it would permanently require the state of Minnesota to do that, and that's exactly what this provision is doing. It is permanently requiring a tax aid to be paid for all time. Read it on the line. It says 53.13 does not terminate. So, you know, if you want to say it doesn't cost money, it does, but even if you buy that, that isn't the measure for whether bills go to tax committee. And, you know, I've said enough. I think I know that you're probably not sending this tax committee, but I just think this is the kind of stuff that happens when, you know, we're meeting this late. The tax committee does have time to hear this provision.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Lencheski. If you take a look at page 53, it speaks to 356.215, which is actuarial valuation experience rating. And if you take a look back at 49.13 through 49.14, what you're really doing is saying that in the light of an actuarial valuation that is insufficient, the actuary may suggest a redetermination of the amounts that are contributed either by the employer or employee.
Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, I mean, there's no point in belaboring it. I know people have other things to do, and I hear you. Representative Albright, I mean, I think that's, you know, I know I've had to do it before, make the arguments, but members on line, you know, 53.3, we are amending a tax code, and what we're doing in Section 423 is a tax provision that is in Chair Drazkowski and Chair David's committees, and we are permanently providing an aid that was never heard in the tax committee. And again, I understand what's going to happen here, but I will continue to protest it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if others have questions, but I thought after the amendment went on, it might be good to just very briefly hear from probably Mr. Johnson and Mr. Ranieri, if they're still here, as to what their thoughts are about the bill after it's been amended.
We already adopted it.
I know we adopted it.
Oh.
No, it's on the bill.
Yes.
And I want to know what their thoughts are as the bill is about to move forward, if how they perceive the bill as amended. Maybe I should correct how I say that. If they have any thoughts very quickly, because they did have concerns, Mr. Chairman, when we were in state government finance.
So, well, certainly happy to have them come forward and testify if you got some questions for them. Representative Carlson, could the gentleman that were referenced, Mr. Ranieri, come forward? Mr. Ranieri, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Asking for extensive testimony, but the bill was amended, and there's that two-year window now that was put in, and then it reverts back. And so I think it's important for us to know what the city of Minneapolis, and I don't know if Mr. Johnson is still here, but he represents, I think, MRF. At least you're here if you could comment.
Mr. Chairman and
Mr.
members.
Ranieri.
Gene Ranieri from the City of Minneapolis. I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations. Starting in 2017, the split between the state and the employers, which include Hennepin County, ourselves, the school board, the park board, and MAC, it would be 21-16, which is the same as the Pension Commission adopted a few months ago. So we're okay with that.
So you're okay with the bill, as
yes.
And I'd like to hear from Mr. Johnson. I see he's entered the room, if he would be willing to.
Representative Murphy, did you have a question for Mr. Ranieri?
I do.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ranieri, can we go back to the proportional amount? Sure. Is that, could you address that at all?
Mr. Ranieri.
Will that change at all for?
You mean, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, you mean between and among the each? No, it will not change. Off the top of my head, the city of Minneapolis is 56% of the contribution. The park board is 10%. The school board is 23%. And MAC is around 5%. And the rest, I think, is the county. And that will not stay the same. That will stay the same. It will not change. Because I think, Mr. Chair, and I'll check, Representative Murphy, I think the split is identified in statute. I think it's a proportion of what the liabilities were back in 2009 per employer.
Okay, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, at least several of us on a previous committee, quite frankly, voted no on the bill because we were concerned at the time about the provision involving MRF. Mm-hmm. And now that's been amended, and we were interested in what you and Mr. Ranieri had to say about the bill as it's now amended.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Johnson. I represent the Minneapolis Municipal Retirement Association. Throughout the process, we have raised a concern about the assumptions that the actuary used to reach the $37 million figure, specifically the discount rate, and that was based on a statement made by the actuary. I've been around here in one form or another since 1986, and I know when that ship has sailed, and that ship sailed. So, I had spoken with Representative O'Driscoll, and others, and, my understanding is the Pension Commission is going to continue to look at that issue, so that makes us feel better about things. Our basic concern is we want it to be the right number. We don't want your members in Paris subsidizing the MRF merger. There's the perception in the Minneapolis teachers merger where that's happened, even though there wasn't a subsidy there, so that was important to us, but then also to make sure that we paid our way. So, we feel like progress has been made on the split, and we feel good about that, and we feel better about, continuing to look at the issue, but that's our concern, and it's really, trying to get the best number, not the one that is, not unreasonable from an actuarial perspective, but the one that best hits, the best educated guess we can make to get there. So we'll continue working on it and go from there. But thank you for the opportunity.
Representative Carlson, do you have any other questions? All right.
Being that we did, quite frankly, rather strongly, to say the least, opposed the bill and state government finance because of the MRF provision. Thought it was important that we find out what the feelings were of the MRF representative and the city of Minneapolis. So I thank them both.
Okay, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative O'Driscoll.
What's the path forward now for this bill? Is it going to continue to be a bill?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, the motion that the chair made tonight, assuming that it makes it through the Ways and Means Committee, will be to be referred to the General Register, which means that it would be able to come up on the floor for a vote. And the Senate has passed a similar version earlier this week, 53-11. In consultation with the vice chair, who is Senator Pappas. She and I have been in very close contact with one another throughout the last 7 days about the provisions, making sure that they line up. She has some housekeeping language that is in their bill that we have incorporated along the way in ours, and she is open to taking this on a concurrence if we pass it and send it over to the Senate, so it would be then able to go to the governor to take care of the technical corrections and all the other issues that we spoke about this evening, along with constituent related activities.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, will any parts of, to your knowledge, will any parts of this bill be also included in the state government finance bill?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, the only thing that would be referenced, to the best of my knowledge, in the state government finance bill would be the, because it is the finance committee, and we referenced the split that we put in this evening, would be the biennial number for the state government finance bill of the $31.6 million split, and there would be no other language that would be pension-related language in that bill, other than it would need to be supporting that $31.6 million split.
And
Representative Murphy,
Mr. Chair, is the savings from the difference between the $37 million and the $51 million, is that that's completely separated from pension money at this time?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, because the state government finance area had a complete target, and this is savings that's being recognized under that particular financial umbrella, those monies were used in other ways in the state pension, excuse me, in the state government finance bill.
Any other discussion to Senate File 1398 as amended? Well, members, I guess I'm not sure what to say in regard to the other tax issue that was brought up before. I guess, it, you know, when I read the rule, it talks about a bill with a substantial impact on tax revenues or tax policies. This certainly doesn't have a impact on tax revenues. It certainly has an impact on pension policies. That particular item is carried in the tax bill. But I guess, you know, I think what I would do as chair is to just renew my motion with the idea that we can deal it with it on the floor if people feel that this is something that should be referred. So I'll renew my motion that Senate File 1398, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senate File 1398, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Well, members, before I had told you I thought we had our last meeting last time, I think this is our last meeting this time. I was thinking, Representative Carlson, you know, I can recall going back to one of your previous comments that I know of at least one amendment I can think of that we had of yours with a campaign finance board that we took a while back. But anyway, I appreciate your...
very minor, Mr. Chairman.
$150,000. But I appreciate your leadership and help, Representative Carlson.
$150,000 looks a little different when you're in a committee like this, but that's fine. Thank you.
All right. Well, members, I don't know if this is the last meeting or not, but anyway, thank you so much for all your help. Thank you, staff, Representative Carlson. Yeah.
Well, I just, last time you thanked Shirley for all these good treats. She had them here again tonight, and I didn't get an opportunity to thank her as well. I've almost thanked her daily, but well, we really appreciate that and just wanted to know that. Thank
you. Well, she deserves daily thanks, and I will have to get on to a major exercise program here as soon as the session is over. With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.